sahanavavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahavidyan karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu mavidvishavahai. Om shanti, shanti, shanti. Very good. Welcome back. We'll continue our study of Chapter 7, Jnana Vijnana Yoga. We'll begin with some chanting, as always, with verse 12. Repeat after me.
Ye chaiva sattvika bhava, ye chaiva sattvika, rajasas tamasascha ye, rajasas tamasa, mattahe vetitan vidhi, mattahe vetitan. Natvaham teshu te mayi, natvaham teshu te. Tribhir gunamayar bhavar, tribhir gunamayar. Ebhis sarvamidam jagat, ebhis sarvamijam. Mohitam nabhijanati, mohitam nabhijanati. Mamebhyah paramavyayam, mamebhyah paramavyayam. Daivi hyesha gunamayi, daivi hyesha. Mama maya duratyaya, mama maya. Mameva ye prapadyante, mameva ye. Maya metam tarantite, maya metam taram. Namam dushkritino mudhaha, namam dushkritino. Prapadyante naradhamaha, prapadyante na. Mayaya pahrita jnana, mayaya pahrita. Asuram bhavam ashrataha, asuram bhavam. Chaturvidhabhajante mam, chaturvidhabha. Jana sukriti norjuna, jana sukriti. Artho jignyasur artarti, artho jignyasur. Jnani cha bharat arshabha, jnani cha bharat. Tesham jnani nitya yukta, tesham. Ekta bhaktir visheshyate. Priyo hi jnani no tyartam. Priyo hi jnanino, aham sacha mama priyaha, aham sacha mama, udara sarva he vaite, udara sarva, jnani tvatmaiva me matam, jnani tvatmaiva, astita sahi yuktatma, astita sahi yuktatma, mamevanuttam ham gatam, mamevamuttamam. Bahunam janmanam ante, bahunam jan. Sorry. Bahunam janmanam ante, bahunam. Jnanavan mam prapadyate, jnanav. Vasudeva sarvamiti, Vasudeva sarv, samahatma sudur labaha, samahatma sudur, kamaisthaisthairahritajnanaha, prapadyantenya devataha, prapadyantenya dev. Tam tam niyamamasthaya, tam tam niyamamast, prakritya niyam niyata swaya, prakrit. Yo yo yam yam tanuh bhaktaha, yo yo yam. Yo yo yam yam tanuh bhaktaha. Shraddhayarchitam ichyati, shraddhayarchitam. Tasya tasya chalam shraddham, tasya tasya chalam. Tameva vidadham yaham, tameva vid. Good. So easy to push a button. You'd think I'd figure it out by now? Okay.
So let's get back. We finished verse 13. We'll continue with verse 14 today. This chapter opens with this very profound discussion about who is the Ishvara to whom we pray. And we've been discussing at some length the apara and the para prakriti, the lower nature and the higher nature. The apara prakriti, the lower nature of Ishvara, is the manifest world that we experience every day. The para prakriti, the higher nature of Ishvara, is that which is, we use the English word transcendent, that which is beyond the world, beyond the mind, beyond thought. So we have these two aspects. We, in Western philosophical terminology, immanent and transcendent. Immanent, here now, transcendent, beyond, or apara and para. Now, we've in the last class, we saw a rather long unfoldment, beautiful unfoldment of the apara prakriti, the Lord's, Ishvara's manifestation in the world as the world. Watch, that language is tricky, isn't it? Ishvara's manifestation in the world as the world. That language is important. So Ishvara is manifest in the world not merely as Sri Rama or Sri Krishna, as some people would think in a very narrow manner, but Ishvara is present in the world as the world itself. The world is a manifestation of that Ishvara. That is the apara prakriti, the lower nature, the immanent nature. And let me just make a connection for you. We should go back to pick up the thread. We really need to see the prior verse. Everything we experience is Ishvara. Really speaking, as the Upanishad says, the Rishi says, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. All this is nothing but Brahman, speaking at a very absolute sense. So the Rishi said, all this is nothing but Brahman. Here Sri Krishna says, the entire world that you experience is nothing but Ishvara. Then the question becomes, why and how is it that we don't recognize it? Why is it that everyone, if not everyone, so many people say, I'm seeking God? What a common expression. An important one, a profound one. I'm seeking God. Well, where will you seek God? Pardon me for being a little silly. You know, you start lifting up rocks, looking underneath each rock to see, is Bhagavan there? That's a very silly and naive perspective. All that exists is a manifestation of Ishvara. To use a metaphor we've used many times, it's as though we're looking at Ishvara's body, so to speak. But we have a difficulty of perspective. A good example of difficulty of perspective is if I were to stand in front of the screen with my nose 2 inches away from it, I wouldn't be able to read the text. In order to read the text on the screen, you require some distance. And this describes part of our difficulty in understanding the creation as a manifestation of Ishvara, and that is, we don't have perspective. Because of our perspective, we have a hard time making that recognition, as if we're standing too close to see the big picture, as they say. To return, and just we'll return to our verse in just a moment, but before we do, just to return to the metaphor that we've been using so extensively, the metaphor that's so helpful, the dream metaphor. The dream character, remember the dream metaphor, your dream is a manifestation of you. If this is your dream, I am a character in your dream. And if this is your dream, everything you see is nothing but you. Everything I see is nothing but you. But me, as your dream character, I will have a hard time appreciating who are you. What is this dream world made of? And the difficulty is, there is a creative process. No, let's get to the next verse. Next, we're ready to introduce the next verse. So why is it that we don't recognize all this as a manifestation of Ishvara? Why is it, as a dream character, I have such great difficulty recognizing you, the Creator? So let's proceed with verse 14. Daivi hesha gunamayi, daivi hesha maya mama maya duratyaya, mama maya duratyaya. Mameva ye prapadyante, mameva ye mayam etam tarantite, mayam etam. So referring to this manifest world, referring to Ishvara's presence in the form of this world, Sri Krishna says, he, esha, he indeed, esha, all this which is daivi, divine, all this world, that's the context, this entire world which is daivi, divine, why is it divine? What is it made of? If something is made of tin, it's not valuable. If something is made of gold, it's valuable. If something is made of pure divinity, it is divine. This world has as its underlying reality, the underlying stuff of which everything exists, because of which everything exists. That underlying reality is Ishvara. It is pure divinity. So this cosmos is made of divinity. And here, daivi, it is divine. It is gunamayi. It is made of three gunas. So made of divine means what? Divinity is not a thing. So that thing that we call divine, divinity, Ishvara, has to be manifest in a particular way. How is it manifest? It's manifest as triguna. As three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas. And as we said in a prior class, this is the ancient worldview of the cosmos. In modern times, we think of the world as being comprised of matter and energy. Well, exactly like we see the world as being composed of matter and energy, the ancient saw the world as being composed of three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. So we could say then that the divinity, Ishvara, becomes manifest as three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas, and then from these three gunas, the entire world appears. These three gunas are the basis, like matter and energy is the basis for the universe in the same way. The three gunas can be considered the basis for the universe. So esha, this entire world, which is daivi, divine, is gunamayi. It is made from these three gunas. And actually, esha maya, excuse me, I need to make the proper connection. This, and here we're in for an interesting discussion about the word maya. One of the words that is most misunderstood, and the misunderstandings of the word maya lead to great confusion and great consequences. I made a small mistake in the interpretation of this of the Sanskrit. Esha maya is what Sri Krishna is talking about. This maya, which is daivi, divine. Of course, this maya is manifest as a world. We'll talk about it. I didn't make a mistake in the meaning. I made a mistake in the grammar. So, esha maya, this world, which is maya, which we'll talk about, is daivi, divine. It is gunamayi, it is made of these three gunas. And this maya, this mama maya, my maya, Sri Krishna says, mama maya is duratyaya. It's difficult to understand. It's difficult to penetrate. It's difficult to understand, to grasp fully. So, what exactly is this maya? And this is one of the words that... One difficulty is, for many Sanskrit words, this is true in every language, sometimes there's not an exact translation available for a given for a given word. I don't know how true that is in other languages. It's absolutely true in Sanskrit. There are certain technical expressions which cannot be translated in a very simple one-word manner, and maya is such a word. To translate it as illusion is wrong, absolutely wrong. How to understand the word maya? Go back to the dream metaphor. Your dream exists because of your maya. Your dream is your maya. Sri Krishna says this world is mama maya. You can say your dream world is mama maya, my maya. So what does that maya mean in that context? Your dream, if I'm a character in your dream is not an illusion to me. If I'm a character in your dream world is the only reality I know. Your dream world is as real as it gets for me, a dream character. And I'm building this up to help you appreciate why illusion is not necessarily the best translation for maya. It has some purpose, but it's a very limited, short-sighted translation. It's a more complex topic than that. If we merely reduce your dream world to an illusion, if I'm your dream character, how do I explain birth and death in this dream world if it's all an illusion? Birth is not an illusion. Death is not an illusion. This is some of the limitation of translating the word maya as illusion. Then how shall we understand it? Your dream is your maya. It exists because of your maya. What is your maya? The first translation, and I think one of the better translations we can use, is this. Creative capacity. One meaning for maya, one good definition for maya, is creative capacity. You have some kind of creative capacity because of which you were able to create your dream world, because of which your dream stuff came into existence, because of which you, the dreamer, are manifest in the form of your dream creation. So let me put it into one sentence. Because of your maya, because of your creative capacity, you, the dreamer, become manifest as your dream world, as your dream creation. That's a very helpful way of understanding maya as a creative capacity. Now, if I'm your dream character, and somebody tells me, I'm reading a book, and the book says that this world exists because of a supreme being. So I'm reading a dream book, a dream Bhagavad Gita perhaps, a translation of the Bhagavad Gita. And this translation tells me that this world exists as a result of a supreme being. That supreme being has a creative capacity through which the supreme being becomes manifest in the form of this cosmos, and that creative capacity is called maya. And I'm reading this, and I'm getting it partially until I get to that word maya. So, okay, maya is a creative capacity, but what exactly is it? Creative capacity means what? Show me some. And this is a difficulty. This is a second level of difficulty in understanding what this maya means. It's not exactly a thing, even if we translate it as creative capacity, that already suggests it's not a thing. And then we have our grammarians who have a nice definition for maya. You want to see how I'll show you how a grammarian will define maya. Someone who's an expert in Sanskrit grammar will translate it in this way. It's a pun. Ya ma sa maya. Breaking the word up into two parts. Ya and ma. Ya is a pronoun, that which. Ma can sometimes mean na. Yama, that which is not, that which doesn't exist, sa, that is maya. That which does not exist is maya. How do you like that definition? That's the definition of our grammarians. That which does not exist as a particular thing. If this is your dream world and I'm the dream character, and I just read in a dream Bhagavad Gita that all this exists because of maya, the supreme being with the agency of maya created all this. So then I say, okay, well, I can't find a supreme being. Let me look for maya. Where will I look for maya? Here lies the difficulty. Maya is not something in the world which can be discovered, can be grasped, which is leads to this definition then. Yama, sa maya. That which does not exist as a particular thing, that is maya. So maya is not a thing in the universe. It's a creative capacity because of which the universe exists. Now, this sounds a little bit tricky, little bit abstract, a little bit hard to understand. Well, Sri Krishna admits as much. He says, Duratyaya. He says, this is hard to understand. It's hard to get. This is a very subtle topic. In that dream analogy, if I'm your dream character, trying to understand you, the dreamer, you can appreciate what a subtle and difficult and challenging inquiry that's going to be. But then, what are we inquiring into? We're inquiring into who and what is Ishvara, the source of the cosmos. This is not an ordinary inquiry. If it were ordinary, I don't think we would need the Bhagavad Gita. It's an extraordinary inquiry, and here Sri Krishna himself admits, Duratyaya mama maya. My maya, my creative capacity, is Duratyaya. It is difficult to understand, but mam eva ye prapadyante, ye, those who prapadyante, seek, resort to, those who seek mam, me, mam eva. Sometimes this eva doesn't have an important meaning. Here the eva has a big meaning. Eva can mean indeed, eva can mean alone. Here it means alone. Mam eva prapadyante, those who seek me alone. And we'll come back to it. Those who seek me alone, mayam etam, etam, this, mayam, this maya, taranti te. Those, ye mam prapadyante, those who seek me, mam eva, those who seek me and me alone, etam mayam, this maya, te, they, taranti, can cross, can understand, they can figure it out. Those who resort to me, those who seek me alone, they can understand what is maya. So he said in the first half that maya is duratyaya, is difficult to understand, but now he's offering a ray of hope. Those who seek me alone, mam eva, te taranti etam maya. They can get it. They can discover the truth of this maya. You discover the truth of maya not by seeking maya. Yeah? Isn't that what he's saying? If you want to understand maya, how ironic. If you want to understand computers, don't study computers. What? If you want to understand cooking, stay out of the kitchen. But figuratively speaking, that's what he is saying here. If you want to understand maya, te taranti etam maya, those people cross over this maya, penetrate this maya, understand what this maya is. Who is it that can understand what is maya? Those who mam eva prapadyante, those who seek me, not seeking maya, those who seek me. Now, this makes sense in this case. It doesn't make sense with computers and cooking. I admit it. But it makes perfect sense here. Go back to the dream metaphor. If I'm your dream character, if I want to understand the creative capacity through which this dream universe comes into existence, the way I'm going to understand it is by seeking you, the dreamer. Correct? This is the idea. But now we've got that Eva. So by seeking you, the dreamer, I can understand the process through which the dream creation comes into existence. By seeking Ishvara, God, I can discover the creative, I can understand the creative process through which his universe comes into existence. That Eva. Mam Eva Prapadyante. Me, those who seek or those who resort to me alone. And here's something which can be a little jarring when you hear it. For many people, spiritual pursuit or seeking God, which is really our context here, seeking God is not a full-time pursuit. It's a part-time pursuit. It's something you do occasionally. It's something you do on Saturday mornings. So look at life like this. Saturday morning, you seek God. Saturday afternoon, you seek lunch. Saturday evening, you seek recreation. Sunday morning, you seek sleep. Etc., etc. Monday, you go to work because you're seeking a paycheck. So suppose we view life through this particular lens, understanding life, we seek different things in different contexts. And one of the many things that you seek in life is seeking God. This is what you do on Saturday mornings. What does Sri Krishna say here in the second half? Those who can really understand Maya are those who mam eva prapadyante, those who seek God alone. Now, seeking God alone doesn't necessarily mean living a life of a sannyasi, a monk. It does mean a radical transformation of your priorities, of your thinking. We discussed this way back in chapter 2 and 3 when we discussed karma yoga. We've said that a basic principle of spiritual life, a basic principle of karma yoga, is to erase the division between spiritual life and worldly life. And I don't, it's a big discussion. We'll spend the rest of the class talking about it if we get into it too much. So I just want to bring you back very briefly to reflect on that. There is no such thing as worldly life. There's only spiritual life. Life is meant for spiritual growth. All life is meant for spiritual growth, including, we mentioned the other thing, including seeking lunch, seeking entertainment, seeking sleep. Whatever activity you're engaged in is meant for the sake of spiritual growth. How do you use all of these so-called worldly activities? How do you use worldly activities for the sake of spiritual growth? That's what karma yoga is all about. That's what was introduced in chapter 2. That's what chapter 3 focused on. That which was talked about in chapters 4 and 5. The most important topic in the entire, I won't say most important, the biggest topic in the Bhagavad Gita is karma yoga. So through the teachings of karma yoga, one can reach this point, what that Sri Krishna describes. Mam eva ye prapadyante. Those who seek me alone. Those whose lives are focused on spiritual growth. And we'll set this aside in one moment, but an easier way of understanding it without going through the whole teachings of karma yoga is this. You have a to-do list, and on Saturday's to-do list is go to Arsha Bodha Center, go to lunch, go shopping, all the Indian stores. You do that, right? All these Indian stores are here. Good. So this is all your to-do list. suppose you were to take, and this is a very simplistic way of understanding karma yoga, but a valid way. Suppose you just kind of redid the to-do list in terms of priority so that seeking spiritual growth was always the number one priority at all times in all situations. That's what it comes down to. In all times and all situations, seeking spiritual growth is your utmost goal. And if it's your utmost goal, then you can find ways that going to the Indian store shopping can contribute to your spiritual goal in some manner. And that's what karma yoga is all about. Anyway, enough said. So this, to summarize this verse, Sri Krishna says, this cosmos exists because of mama maya, because of my creative capacity, which is duratyaya, which is hard to understand. But if you are really focused on a life of spiritual growth, specifically, if you're focused on discovering who is Ishvara, who is that God of the cosmos, he says, te taranti. Such people can truly understand what is this maya, how does this world come about. But it's understood, as we joked about, to learn cooking, you can't stay out of the kitchen. To learn computers, you can't avoid computers. But here, in order to understand maya, the focus is not maya, the focus is Ishvara. Okay, enough. Excuse me. We'll continue. Verse 15.
Namam duskriti no mudhah. Namam duskriti no mudhah. Prapadyante naradhamah. Prapadyante narah. Maya yapahrita jnana. Maya yapahrita jnana. Asuram bhavam ashatah. Asuram bhavam.
So, interesting contrast to the prior verse. In the prior verse, Sri Krishna says, those who seek me can understand. What is maya? Can understand everything, those who seek me. What about those who don't seek me? What about those who don't seek God in general? What about those who don't seek spiritual growth? Well, Sri Krishna has some very harsh words that he uses here. He says,
na prapadyante mam, na mam prapadyante, those who don't seek me, na prapadyante, do not seek mam, me, those who don't seek me, who are those? Mudhaha, fools.
By the way, mudha is the word from which the Hindi word murk comes from. Murk is mudha. So, those mudhaha, those fools, who are dushkratinaha, those who do wrong things, bad things, those who commit sin are dushkratina. Dushkratin, dushkratinaha, plural. So, those mudhaha, fools, those dushkritinaha, those evildoers, who namam prapadyante, those who fail to seek me, those who are nara adhamaha, the lowest of men. Whoa! These are really, really harsh words. He's referring to anyone who doesn't seek spiritual growth. These are harsh words. Why would he use such harsh language? There's a nice English expression, a reality check. Here's a reality check. What does one, and a Vedantic reality check. This is how it works. What do we seek in life? We seek peace, contentment, joy, happiness, love, whatever words you like to use. This is it. Now, tell me, can you find perfect peace, love, contentment, happiness, love? Can you find it at any of the Indian markets on Route 27 here? Which is a metaphor for can you find it exclusively through worldly pursuits? This is where Vedanta begins. Vedanta begins with the recognition that what we truly seek in life, contentment, peace, etc., that contentment, that peace, perfect contentment, perfect peace, can never be the result of worldly activities. This is Vedanta 101, basic principle. The perfect contentment and peace we seek in life can never be attained merely through worldly activities. Then what choice do we have if we want perfect contentment and peace? What choice do we have but to seek spiritual growth, which will lead us, can lead us, does lead us to that perfect contentment and peace? So if everyone says, I want contentment and peace, but then they go to the Indian store, they go to the mall, right? With their credit card, seeking happiness, contentment, and peace. This is the typical American blunder. Of course, it's not just American anymore. The whole world is going shopping in malls with credit cards. Unless you live in a little village, you're going to a mall with your credit card. Seeking what? This is the irony of life. So you ask the person in a mall, what are you seeking? And they'll say, oh, I'm looking for this or that or the other thing. Okay. Then you say, why are you looking for this? I'm looking for a new pair of shoes. Typical. So I'm looking for a new pair of shoes. Why do you want a new pair of shoes? Oh, it'll make me content. So what are you seeking? Shoes or contentment? Huh. The shoes you can find in the mall. Contentment you cannot find in the mall. Shoes you can buy with a credit card. Contentment you cannot buy with a credit card. This is the fundamental delusion of life, and every mature person has to wake up out of this particular delusion, thinking that if we just work hard enough in life and do enough and accomplish enough, we can create a life in which we enjoy perfect contentment and perfect peace. It is, to use a British expression, rubbish. It's not possible. And now to use Sri Krishna's language, one who seeks perfect contentment and peace through worldly activities is they are deluded. They're dushkritinaha because they're doing the wrong things for the sake of contentment and peace. They're going to the mall for contentment and peace instead of, I don't know, coming to a pravachan on Bhagavad Gita as an example among many other things they could do for the sake of seeking contentment and peace. So this then is why Sri Krishna uses such harsh language. This is a huge division in life between those who recognize the limitations of what can be accomplished through worldly life and those who fail to recognize the limitations of what can be achieved through worldly life. Those who fail to recognize the limitations of worldly life, they will continue to be infatuated with the world and focused exclusively on going to the mall with their credit card to buy whatever they think will bring true happiness and contentment. And rightly so. Sri Krishna calls such people mudhaha, fools. So, those mudhaha, those fools, dushkritinaha, engaged in all the wrong activities, the nara adhamaha, the lowest of men, namam prapadyante, they do not seek me. Why? And seeking me is part of the bigger process of spiritual growth. Seeking God is part of the bigger picture of seeking spiritual growth. Why are these people so confused? Why do people still think that you go to the mall with your credit card and you can buy some contentment. Why would anyone think that? Mayaya apahrita jnana. People whose jnana, whose wisdom is apahrita, robbed away. People whose wisdom is robbed away by what? Mayaya. By maya. What does it mean to have your wisdom robbed away by maya? Maya is very seductive. How is maya seductive? By the way, it's interesting that the word maya is in strilinga. It's a feminine gender. And sometimes we associate seductiveness with a certain kind of woman. Not all women, but a certain kind of woman who's the seductress. So maya is the seductress, trying to tempt you with your credit card. By the way, in the mall, have you noticed? Of course you've noticed, every shop has a big window in front of it. And in the window, what do they do? They put all of their products in a... And do they just throw it all in the window? The window display? They don't just throw it. In fact, in the window display and throughout the store, all of the products are arranged in a very attractive manner. In a very seductive manner. Mayaya apahrita jnana. So all of this is meant to seduce you. Seduce you from a marketing standpoint. It's meant to seduce you into pulling out your piece of plastic and putting some charges on that. That's from the standpoint of a marketer. From the standpoint of Vedanta, the seduction is much more subtle. The seduction is, you see that pair of shoes in the shop and you think, that's what I need. If I have that pair of shoes, I will be more happy. I'll be more content. Is it true? A pair of shoes. Pair of shoes! Gonna make you more happy, more content? Give me a break! It's just a pair of shoes. The pair of shoes can protect the bottoms of your feet very nicely. But the pair of shoes is certainly not going to bring you contentment, happiness, joy, and peace. But that is the seduction. Notice that the pair of shoes are very artistically designed. And just, you know, whatever they do to make shoes attractive, they do all of that to make the shoes attractive to seduce you. This is what Sri Krishna is describing. Sri Krishna is, you know, 2,000 years ago, this is like a precocious knowledge ahead of time of marketing. Marketing is all about seduction. And that's exactly what Sri Krishna is describing here. Mayaya apahrita jnana. Those whose understanding, those whose perspectives, whose minds are apahrita, robbed away, mayaya, by the seductress called maya. Maya in the form of the pair of shoes, maya in the form of whatever it is, the shiny Lexus in the parking lot of the auto dealership. That can be seductive. Anything like that. You get the idea. Okay. Whatever it is, plenty of it. So, those who succumb to this seduction, don't you think that deserves some harsh language? That's why Sri Krishna calls them mudhaha. That's why he says, nara adhamaha, the lowest of people, are those who yield to this seduction. And more harsh language. Asuram bhavam ashrataha. Such people who yield to this seduction, the seduction of worldly temptation, such people ashrataha become dependent. Not become dependent. They ashataha. They resort to, they embrace. They embrace bhavam, an attitude. What kind of attitude do they embrace? Asuram bhavam. Asuram bhavam is the state of the asuras, the demons. Asura bhava is actually, it's a, you know, to translate it literally doesn't work. Asura bhavam is demonic state. But in chapter 16, Sri Krishna goes into this asura bhavam, and he describes it not as a demonic state, but rather as a description of the negative aspects of human personality, human weaknesses, all human weaknesses. So these, the sum total of all human weaknesses are collectively called asura bhavam, a demonic condition. So those people who are mayaya apahrita jnana, who are carried away due to the seduction of worldly temptations, such people are said to be ashrataha, embracing asura bhavam, embracing the lowest of human traits. And just a brief comment here. Human nature is something I don't think anyone can truly understand. Human nature exists on such a wide scale. Most of what we experience is in the middle. We have some people who are good people, some people who are not so good people, but they're mostly in the middle. But there are people on the extremes of that scale. There are people of extreme saintliness, and there are people on the other extreme. People who would kill you for their convenience, as an example. This is the scale, I'm sorry, not the scale, the range of human possibilities. From Saddam Hussein on one extreme to the Dalai Lama on the other extreme, or use whatever examples you like, just to give some examples of this extremely wide range of human behaviors, of human traits. And what I think Sri Krishna is referring to here is, it's up to us where we put ourselves on that range. So he's talking about those who slip down that range, those who fall prey to seductions of worldly temptation. They go to the low end of that range. On the other hand, he said in a prior verse, those who seek me, those who seek God, those who seek spiritual growth, they climb up towards the highest levels of that range of human experience. Okay. Continuing. This is a much quoted verse. Chaturvidha bhajante mam, chaturvidha bhajante. Jana Sukriti Norjuna, Jana Sukriti Arto Jignasurartarti, Arto Jignasurartar Jnani Chabharatar Shabha, Jnani Chabharat. Bharata Rishabha, bull among men, addressing Arjuna. O Arjuna. So two verses ago, talking about those who seek God. Who are those who seek God? So those who are those who do not fall prey to the seduction of worldly temptations? Who is it that mam prapadyante, Sri Krishna says? Who is it that seek me? Who is it that seek God? He says that chaturvidha bhajante mam. There are four kinds of people. Chaturvidhaha. Four kinds of people who bhajante mam, who worship me, who seek me. Four kinds of people, four kinds of janaha people. Chaturvidhaha janaha. Four kinds of people who seek me, who seek Lord. Who are sukratinaha? We saw dushkratinaha in the last verse, people who are engaged in harmful activities. Here, sukratinaha, those who are engaged in good activities, pious activities, healthy activities. O Arjuna, there are four kinds of people who seek me, four kinds of people who are engaged in good activities. Who are those four kinds of people? Let's just get the words down. First of all, Artaha. Oh, I'm going to put them up on the board and in a little different order because the order is important. So the four kinds are the, and I'll define them in just a moment, the Artha. I'm going to spell it right. Arti. The Jignasu. And the Jnani. All right. Arta. Artarti, Jignasu, and Jnani. A little different order than they are. There's a purpose to this order. By the way, in Sanskrit verses, if there's a list of words to be given, the list will often have the order jumbled. And the reason the order of lists get jumbled is that these verses have a certain poetical meter, which means a certain sequence of short and long syllables. So in order to make the list fit into this meter with long and short syllables being restrained, then the order of words is frequently changed. So we have to be ready for that. So the Artha is the first of these four. The Artha is a person in distress. And Shankara's commentary, Shankara has a way with words. So who is the person in distress? Who is this Artha? The Artha is one who is Arti Parigrahitaha. Artha Parigrahita Taskara Vyagra Rogadina Abhibhutaha Apannaha. So who is the Artha? One who is Arti Parigrahita. One who has been grasped by a calamity. One who has fallen into a calamity. What kind of calamity? Taskara, thief. Vyagra, tiger. Roga, illness. Etc. Adina. Abhibhutaha, overcome. Overcome by a calamity like a thief, like a tiger, like illness. So Shankara is a very succinct description of the Artha, someone who's in trouble. And we all know the kind of person who only prays when they're in trouble. You know people like that. Person who never goes into a temple, never says any prayer until something happens. When something goes wrong, something big goes wrong, then they're in a temple, then they're doing prayers, then they call the priest and do the puja, whatever it is. But only when things go bad. Now, before we go on, something very important to observe here. Sri Krishna is not criticizing this person. These four are singled out as being the good guys, as being the praiseworthy ones. So he's going to give us a list of four right now, and admittedly, the Artha is at the bottom of the list. I've shown it at the top, but metaphorically speaking, the Artha is at the bottom of the list, but he's going to say in two more verses, he's going to say all of the four are praiseworthy. So the point is that the one who only prays in times of distress is not being criticized by Sri Krishna here, being praised. Now, why would Sri Krishna praise a person? Well, at least they're praying. They're recognizing. And that prayer, by the way, it's a big thing. Just as an aside, prayer is absolutely remarkable in its implications. Someone who prays at all, even in a, and maybe only at a time of dire conditions, that person who prays is one who admits, I'm not ultimately in control. And what profound wisdom that shows in that recognition that there are so many things in this situation that I don't control, and then further to recognize that all that is happening here is all part of a bigger picture, all part of a cosmic intelligence, if we can use that kind of language, a cosmic intelligence which is a manifestation of that Ishvara, Ishvara's mind, Ishvara's intelligence. It is to recognize that intelligent order of the universe, which is Ishvara's intelligence. Any prayer is a recognition of that intelligence. Any prayer is a recognition of that Ishvara, and certainly a recognition of our own limitations, so that even if the prayer only comes at a time of distress, that prayer reveals so much about the person. So the first of our four kinds of people who seek Ishvara, who worship Ishvara, the first category is called Artha, those who are distressed. The second kind, Artharti, is actually two words. It's a compound. And the compound, you can see the words. If I take off the declension, Artin. Artin means a seeker of Artha, and here Artha means wealth. Artartin, or Artarti, is one who seeks wealth. Now, Sri Krishna is talking about those who seek God. So what is he talking about? Those who seek wealth, those who seek material things. Well, talking about seeking God, I thought. And this is, I guess the easiest way to see this is at the time of Deepavali, when in so many families, in homes and business places, what takes place at that time of Deepavali is Lakshmi Puja. So, in the performance of Lakshmi Puja at the time of Deepavali or at any time, what is the purpose of that puja? Ostensibly, puja is for the sake of worshiping God. But what is the real reason for doing that puja? It's to ask your family or your business be blessed with prosperity in the coming year. That's kind of the sense of that Lakshmi Puja at the time of Deepavali. But notice, once again, the person who only prays when they're distressed, or only prays when they want to be insured of prosperity in the coming year, this person too is not being criticized by Sri Krishna. Being praised by Sri Krishna. That person knows that without Ishvara's blessings, there will be no prosperity. So that's wisdom. That's praiseworthy, to recognize that without Ishvara's blessings, there's no prosperity. So such a person is not being criticized. But again, it's not the highest form of worship, certainly. In fact, my guru has an interesting way of putting it. He says that when you pray to Ishvara, when you pray to God, any aspect of God, for material things, and there's nothing wrong with it, but in his words, he says, it's like taking Ishvara as your business partner. Which is why you have to put some money in the hundi, because if you don't pay your business partner is going to desert you, leaving you on your own. So you had better share your profits with your business partner by putting something in the hundi. This is my guru's expression. So Bhagavan becomes your business partner. That's not being criticized here, though. Because in a sense, Bhagavan is your business partner. Without God's blessings, we don't accomplish anything in life. So it's really the recognition of a truth. I mean, to call it business partner is sarcastic, absolutely, but it's also true. Not just business partner. Ishvara is your partner in breathing. Huh? Your partner in breathing. Without Ishvara's blessings, you won't breathe. This is the context. Of course, we may or may not recognize that, but Sri Krishna now is describing one who has recognized our dependence on Ishvara. So the artha, one who prays at times of distress, the arthartha, the one who seeks Ishvara's help for material purposes, for prosperity, leading now to the third, which is the jignyasu. Jignyasu literally means one who seeks knowledge, but not knowledge in general. Here, specifically, knowledge of Ishvara. Knowledge of the one to whom we're praying. Knowledge of the one that we're worshiping. And if you wonder about the connection between knowledge and devotion, the connection between jnanam and bhakti, we discussed that right at the very beginning of this chapter. It's in the chapter title, Jnana and Vijnana. Knowledge. Knowledge of Ishvara. Knowledge of God. And if you remember, I'm sure you'll remember our discussion. We said, how can you pray, how can you truly worship a God who's unknown to you? How do you sincerely worship a God who's only partially known to you? So here, knowledge, one whose prayer is, well, let's look at the three. First is the arti. Oh God, please get me out of this one. In fact, that prayer usually takes a very specific form. Oh God, if you get me out of this one, I promise to fill in the blank, right? That is the prayer of the artha. Then comes a prayer of the artharti. The one who says, oh God, please bless me, my family, my business with prosperity in the coming year. Nothing wrong with it, except it is sort of taking Bhagavan as your business partner, as we discussed, but this is the idea. Then comes the prayer of the jignyasu. O creator of the universe, help me understand who you are. Who are you? What is all this? This is your manifestation. Help me to understand how this is all a manifestation of you. So it's a much more profound prayer. It's a prayer for spiritual wisdom. It's a prayer for enlightenment. A prayer for enlightenment. The jignyasu is one who prays for spiritual growth, one who prays for spiritual wisdom, one who prays for enlightenment. And the final one, which we'll talk about in the next verse. We'll finish our class here today. The jnani. The jnani is one who has spiritual wisdom. Jignyasu is one who seeks spiritual wisdom. The jnani is one who has spiritual wisdom, the one who has discovered who and what is Ishvara. And Sri Krishna praises the jnani as being the highest of the four. And that's what he's going to say in the next verse. All of these four are being praised by Sri Krishna. But there's clearly an order. And even though we started with artha, it's really the lowest rung of the ladder is one who only prays a time of distress. Then the next rung up is one who prays, oh God, please bless me and my family and my business in whatever way possible. And then we come up one more level. Hey Bhagavan, you are truly the source of all. Help me know you. Help me understand. Grant me spiritual wisdom, spiritual knowledge, and then the next higher rung, which we'll talk about in our next class, is the jnani, the one who truly knows God, the one who can say, I know, I understand, I know the one to whom I pray. I know concretely. I have a personal, experiential relationship with that one whom I know and I love. And that connection between knowledge and devotion we'll talk about much more in our next class. We'll leave it here for today. All right, a couple of brief announcements. Tomorrow, Sunday, we have the Gita at Work study group, which will meet at 11 o'clock. You're welcome to join 11 o'clock, Gita at Work Study Group. At 6 p.m., I'll be conducting satsang. And I think weather will be nice again. We'll sit outside. It's been very pleasant to sit outside on these warm evenings. So 6 p.m. tomorrow, satsang. I'll mention that if any of you want to see photographs of the anniversary, there's a link on our website. You can go to that link. You can see some photographs of the anniversary of our anniversary. Once again, I want to thank all the volunteers who helped on the anniversary. Also, the volunteers who are helping a lot now on mowing the grass and taking care of the gardens. So many thanks to all of you for your help. Library will be open after class, and we'll conclude with our prayers.